Eternal Beta Podcast, episode 49. It's the 8th of September, 2020. My name is Steve. This week, I'm colloquially known as Games Pass Steve. And we've got a bunch of the crew back. Wasteland Dave, how you doing, Dave?
Good, checking in. Roger 1-2.
Excellent. Michael Starr joining us again.
Yes, that is correct. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Mike Starr. And the gaming dad, we didn't come up with a new name for you this week, Liam.
There's nothing special here to come up with, but hello.
Absentee father.
That could be
hasn't
right.
Been playing games.
That's about right.
Guys, huge week, huge week. We recorded last week's episode right before the NVIDIA announcements, and we just wanted to track how wrong we were going to be about a lot of the rumors on that we'd read up until that point in time. So how do you think we went? I think we were way off in most respects from the leaks.
Well, I'm happy with my confirmation that it can play Commander Keen, but you guys continue.
Yeah. Well, first off, we were so oversold on the pricing. So the pricing's come out as extremely aggressive, you might say.
Yes, pricing is a little better than we expected. So putting the 3090 aside, we'll speak about that beast in a minute. The 3080 is $1,139 or from that price for the 3080. The 3070 coming in at $809, which is probably a bit better than we're all expecting by a couple of $100.
Yeah, most definitely.
Given the performance, like the performance gains as shown in a tightly controlled demo presentation, we're basically buying the above the top current top end now for very competitive prices, which is exciting.
Yeah, so the entry, current entry level card, there will be lower cards coming as well, but the 3070 is claimed to be faster than the 2080 Ti, or we'll call it equivalent performance. It may be faster in some forms of, you know, ray tracing elements and things like that. Comes with 8 gig of G6 VRAM, which 2080 Ti had 11. 220 watt power draw, which is down 40 watts from the 2080 Ti. And for on launch, about half the price.
Yeah, brilliant.
Which, really good. Yeah.
Yep. Question, was the 220 watt, was that TDP or that's actual power draw?
That's TDP. That's the figure that NVIDIA claims, so to be TDP, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a decent start. Like you said, Mike, the presentation from Jensen was actually quite good, I thought. I thought their presentation of the cards was quite straight to the point. Now, obviously, a bunch of the graphs and things they showed weren't particularly detailed, but they did kind of, I know we've seen some other reports of it independently kind of verifying that there's these huge kind of jumps and leaps in performance, which is, I don't know, I'm just blown away actually at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's fair to be blown away. It's been dubbed as the biggest generational leap. The 3080, they're claiming twice the performance of a 2080 Super, and in a generation, that's huge. It's got 10, this is the 3080, it's got 10 gig of G6X RAM, so it's faster RAM again. 320 watt power draw. So the results that have kind of floated out on the internet today, which is a Geekbench 5 result, so this isn't a gaming performance, so don't take it as gospel or anything, but it's showing a 46% increase on the 2080 Ti. 74% on the 2080 Super and 86% on the 2080 Orig OG. Which is really promising for performance-wise, and it's looking like quite a killer GPU at this point in time.
I mean, it's priced nicely as well, when you think about it, for what you're getting.
$1,200 or so to pick up a third party on the cheaper end, probably pushing up to $1,400. For your higher end overclocky kind of variants on launch, somewhere around that market, it's a beast of a card. It really is, and it's not even the top tier. The 3090 is just like a whole other world. 24 gig of VRAM, PCIe 4 is across the range, compatible with 3 as well.
3090 is like out of reach for pretty much everyone, right? Unless it's a professional use case. Or
correct, yeah. And it is aimed with 24 gig of VRAM, and it's aimed for content creators generating, you know, 3D rendering kind of stuffs. It's not to play games on unless you're filthy rich.
The big thing here, though, is that they're not releasing the Founders Editions for sale in Australia, as far as I've read so far.
Yeah, that was confirmed today. Again, confirmed, officially confirmed, 100% legit. They will not be selling them in Australia directly.
So it is possible to order one overseas or somehow and get it sent over. I mean, why would you bother? Yeah. But, I mean, they do look really cool.
Yeah, that's why you'd bother. Because, I mean, I don't have a window in my case, but if you had one, they're a slick-looking unit, in my opinion. They're really good-looking.
I was watching some videos today of people analysing the setup with the fans and just saying, you know, you need a special... Not special, but you have to be careful with your case setup and airflow because it could be worse off with that actual fan setup. I'll have to find and link one of the videos that gave a good explanation of it. But it was interesting how they went through how it was all set up. And I just think they've done really well with it. So it will be good to see once people actually have these in their hands and see, you know, everything is by looking at videos at the moment. Mm. But it will be interesting to see once people start getting their hands on them.
It's such a brick.
Aorus and Gigabyte are doing the contra direction fan flow on their Mac series cards as well. So they're going to have three fans, and the middle one will spin the opposite direction. And they say it creates less turbulent air, therefore heat dissipation is better, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've seen some of the fans even have like every second fin is connected to the one after it. So there's sort of like, and all these kind of, you know, I think realistically these are like very minor engineering upgrades and more marketing spin than anything.
I mean, if you're just creating a slightly different fan, it's going to increase the price and you're going to get slightly better cooling. Every little bit counts if you're planning on pushing a card in the future.
Yeah, I mean, and then there's the water block support for each of them, I suppose, as well. That might be something that needs to be considered if you're going that way with water cooling. Huge news. The internet was very ruffled by the whole thing, and they've really done well there. Do you think they've really kind of done this on purpose to kind of undercut the Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 potential markets, like people that are thinking of going that way, and all of a sudden here's some really competitive priced graphics cards for your new generation?
I think what we discuss with Nvidia going well, not toe-to-toe with AMD, thinking, you know, they're still king of the castle. I still think, in a way, that because AMD haven't announced anything and just seeing how competitive they have been against Intel, that there might have been a bit of fear there. So they still had to price it as competitively as they could.
It means you've got some spare money to bolt on a spoiler for better downforce, right? That's what you need with airflow.
Yeah. That's when you hit the... when you hit the NOS, right?
Play the worlds on the intake.
Yeah, so AMD, the rumors are starting to swirl already, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was something in Fortnite that a streamer discovered last night, I think it was.
It's like a special little room thing that it says something big is coming to the AMD Battle Arena, and then it has 6,000 underneath that. So... this is the start of their marketing campaign.
It's clearly going to be twice as good then, jumping from the 3000 series to the 6000 series.
Yeah. Oh, maybe it was a 4. Well,
I think it was 6. No, the CPUs are the 4000 series from AMD.
Yeah, 5700 XTs, right? So the 6000 series.
Totally.
Well, let's hope they get a better product than that last thing that was marketed through Fortnite called Star Wars,
So the rumored pricing for Big Navi is $549 US, which it's probably going to put it around the $850 to $900 kind of mark, somewhere around that.
So maybe 3070 competitor.
Yeah, it's going to be, well, if they're going to price it at that, it's got to be, you know, a good 15% better than a 3070. So the thing they also have got going for it is 16 gig of VRAM is the rumor, which is a 256 memory bit bus. So compared to the 3070, which has the 8 gig, that's a substantial increase as well. So, and supposedly power draw is probably less than the 3080, but higher than the 3070, somewhere around the 280 mark.
Thing with these AMD cards, though, is they're not going to have... There's a lot of software that came along with the NVIDIA announcements that, along with the, you know, all of the details of their internal core structure, so their ray tracing cores, their AI cores, they pushed a lot about. There's a lot of software side to this as well that AMD doesn't seem to be able to match, or we don't know if they're going to be able to match even.
Well, they didn't do anything in the Navi series in that space, did they? So there was no ray tracing at all. And ray tracing is coming because it's the same chip that's being used in the consoles and it has it. So that's all confirmed. But yeah, the stuff that you're talking about, the NVIDIA broadcast, which is your assistance for your streamers. So yeah, well, that's probably what it's primarily going to be used for. But AI-based virtual backgrounds, you can blur the background, put up images, remove your background entirely. So when you're playing a game, it's just nothing behind you. Webcam auto framing, which is kind of cool. So when you move your head, it follows you around automatically.
Like track AR.
Yeah. And RTX voice, which has been out for a while. And then there was NVIDIA Reflex, which is reducing system latency. So this is... The idea is the input delay between what you do and what is displayed on your screen is reduced significantly. And they're also putting that into hardware with monitors.
So this is like an additional G-Sync type of thing, like kind of a, doing a different thing.
Yeah, to try and delay the lag. So in a highly competitive, you know, professional environment, you want as little lag as possible. And this is trying to cut down some system latency. And it's going to come out on their 360 hertz monitors, which are only going to be used by esports people. Nobody needs a 360 hertz monitor. Well, nobody's going to pay for one, rather. Should I put it like
that? Yeah, I mean, I need one. I'm not going to get one.
And the only other thing we got, Steve, was the RTX IO.
Yeah, so this is pretty good, though, right? Like, this is it's going to make a big deal. Like, not so drawing data compressed off the drive and handing it over to the GPU to decompress and use, which is apparently a lot faster. That's my understanding of it.
Yes, yeah. So that's the general concept of it. However, don't expect to see the same gains that the consoles will have that you'll get on a PC, because on the consoles, they have a very tightly controlled hardware environment and the I/O processors. For lack of the, I can't think of the correct word, but the I/O units are going to be able to manage that information flow far better than on a PCU, which has a very broad range of motherboards and form factors and all those kind of things, your chipsets, all the works. So there will definitely be an increase in performance once it's supported. And this is the other thing, it needs to be supported by specific applications and Windows itself and all that kind of stuff as well. And it needs to be implemented on a software level for this to enable to be occurred as well. So this could be a ray tracing RTX type scenario where we're sitting a generation into RTX and we have a handful of games that run it. And one of those games is Minecraft. It's only in specific worlds. It's not even, you can't just turn RTX on. Yeah, pre-built worlds, right? So it'll help, definitely. And it'll definitely increase or reduce load times. Mm.
They're just doubling down on all their tech, right? They're trying to get out ahead and be like, we're the whale here. We've got all the tech. We're just going to get everyone, as many people on board as we can on our techs before AMD can even get in the ring.
And Microsoft are doing the same thing with this IO. They're bringing the direct support from, based on the stuff that they've done in the Xbox Series X, into Microsoft Windows 10 next year as well. So this isn't necessarily even an exclusive RTX thing. Now, the RTX part is the Tensor cores and the RAM, using the RAM as your VRAM as the place to store all your stuff. That's where they come into the picture of things.
Did you watch the Prezzo, Dave?
I can't say that I did, no.
It was the best bit.
It wasn't very long.
It's like an hour. The best bit, which I thought was actually pretty baller, was when he's like, so here's, I've got a graphics card right here and it's been sitting in frame for the last like 20 minutes at the start. He's like, just pulls out a random 3080.
Yeah,
like,
right. Here it is. Behind.
And it's been sitting there the entire time behind his 1,000 bloody spatulas.
Yeah, that was the meme. And then he got the 3090 out of the oven, I think. So it was a live stream from his kitchen. It was pretty cool.
Bonus points, the oven wasn't on, but it was as hot as an oven normally is. Just the RTX card powering it.
I woke up in the morning, and by the time I got to my computer and jumped on to check it out, you guys had already devoured everything and written up a whole like library's worth of text in the Discord for me to read. So that was cool. And
we got you back, Steve.
Yeah, thanks. And I sat down and watched through it quickly before I started work. And then yeah, I've been kind of trying to plan out my build ever since, really.
Yeah. So what's the build going to be? Where are you going to buy into?
Well, I don't know yet.
Now, because you are a Pascal gaming friend.
I'm back on
Jensen's Pascal gaming friend. It is safe to upgrade now.
Yeah.
Steve.
So he said it's safe to upgrade. He quote. Well, that's nice. I feel safe. But it really does feel like a good time. Like if you haven't done it in 6+ years, 5+ years, it's like it's a very large jump. And I think going forward, I mean, you don't have to do it now. You don't have to do it like in the next month or two. Just any time in the next 6 months, like is a good, probably a good time. And the longer you wait, the more of the lay of the land you're going to have in terms of options available, supply available. Yeah. Understanding things like, oh, does this motherboard support PCIe 4.0 or not? Which they did a Reddit AMA and said that only would make a few percent different, but they didn't define what a few percent is in terms of PCIe 3 lanes to 4. But, you know, if you're upgrading, why don't you wait and see what that requires, you know?
Yeah.
And then you've got the NVMe SSDs and like the support for you know, the newer versions of that on PCIe 4 as well. So like you kind of want to have an understanding of what you're buying into first rather than just buying great priced last gen tech as it goes out. Not that that's a worse decision in the world or anything. It's just that maybe that system will last you, you know, 3 years instead of, and you know, with medium kind of setting stuff rather than getting you through maybe 4 to 5 years with like a really spec'd out build right now.
Yeah.
So 3080 then for you, or are you stretching for the 90?
I don't think I can justify a 90 in any way, shape, or form. You know, unless the government does some sort of handouts that I could put towards it. But yeah, I think it's a 3080 is the goal. Whether I can reach it or not, I don't know. Just have to see how the next kind of business goes in, because you know, I do a lot of freelance work and things like that. So it's always dependent on, you know, large jobs coming in and where I'm at with those. And I've got a whole bunch on my plate for the next 2 months. So, yeah.
Could keep saving.
Yeah. What about you guys? 3080, you reckon?
Oh, I'm leaning towards 3080 at this point. Before the announcement, it was like, probably 3070, but I reckon stretch it to the 3080 personally.
Yeah, I mean, I went the 1080 of the Pascal generation, and I had a 670 before that, I think. So jumping up to the 80 series, and I'm still on it, and I'm still running 1440p games at, you know, high often, and the 60+ frame rates and a lot of stuff. Like, I'm not unhappy with my 1080 choice. It felt like a really powerful thing at the time, and it still feels like it's got grunt now. So if I went 3080, I think I'd feel that like that same strength for quite a while.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I'm going to go on the table here. I'm willing to go the 3090.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm willing to spend at least $30.90 on my next graphic card. Yep.
All out.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Look out. Those emulators. You're going to be hitting.
That's the big
sitting
bucks.
Constant 60 FPS,
well,
mate.
Well, this is always the first thing I do when I upgrade my system and new graphics card and everything. It's like I've probably got one game I want to really, that I want to test to like, you know, see how well it can go in the latest title or something. But then the second thing I do is go straight to emulators and see what I can now emulate.
I think my testing game is going to be Cyberpunk. That's what I'm upgrading for because I want to play that on full.
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's certainly factoring into my decisions a bit as well. It still seems to be the title for the year.
Mm. Unless Star Citizen comes along.
If Star Citizen came out this year, it'd be a huge, terrible mess because that's how 2020 has gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're getting there. They're getting pretty close. I saw some really cool stuff last week on Star Citizen. Maybe we'll talk about later. But Flight Simulator as well. I mean, you know. Performance boost in that would be super handy.
Well, Flight Simulator seems to be somewhat CPU dependent as well, as most simulators typically are, right?
So here's the other part of my dilemma at the moment is that I don't know if I want to wait for the AMD CPU announcements, the 4000 series announcements, to then see what motherboards, like, you know, pair with that and then make my build decision based on that. And I think we're still a little while away from that, maybe a few weeks or something.
Yeah, I think it's next month is supposedly. There's no firm date yet. But if they're starting their marketing for Big Navi now, then we're not far off.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the window of attention
now. Yeah, exactly. And the onus is on them to respond now before people start walking out the door with NVIDIA cards, before they even see what AMD have to offer. But it's also, you've got to consider like where AMD want to compete at. Mm. It's like, do they actually want to compete in the 3080 to 3090 kind of space? Or do they want to go where the bulk of cards are, which currently the most common GPU on Steam in the latest survey is a 1060.
That's it. I think that it's overstated by a lot of YouTubers, and I think maybe why they're so popular is because they're running these first world budget high-end rigs that every teenager wants to have, but they don't. They've got some potato, you know. They're just running on their older cousin's hand-me-down card, and you know. But they want to talk a big game, and they want to talk up that they've got the latest stuff. So, you know, if there's a reason Linus Tech Tips and Jay's Two Cents and all those things are huge on the web because they're running, you know, the newest thing as soon as it comes out, throw it in there. And
does NVIDIA or AMD ever release the stats of, maybe not numbers but percentages of people using what cards? Like, this percent has 1060. So basically, go to Steam and look at what stats people do for the survey. Really.
Yeah, that's the only really broad kind of information we have is off that Steam hardware survey, which is, what, quarterly or something like that?
The other thing that was interesting with that was that I saw that there wasn't very many AMD GPU users. I think it was like 20%.
Because they're all mining crypto with them.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe they're selling shitloads more cards but to crypto miners. Yeah.
I'm actually surprised.
No, I think the Pascal generation was just that strong that nobody bothered.
It says currently as of August this year, 11.18%, which is the highest percent using GTX 1060s.
Yeah, but that's only that specific, just a 1060. If you look through that, there's several other variants in that space. So you're looking at cards that are basically that. The point that we were originally kind of going with is people don't buy the high-end cards that much. They're all sitting in the 60, you know, the 2060 range, which has been picking up percentage, 1660, TIs, all those, we'll call it $300 to $500 graphics cards. They're the ones that people can actually afford to buy when putting together a system that costs, $1,200 to $1,500. This is the most common. And this is where AMD is probably going to target again, because that's what they did last time, moving up to almost the 70 mark.
Mm. So here's the thing, though. What we have yet to really see, and what's really hard to translate with these cards, is what's it actually going to look like and seem like? Because in some ways, we're seeing these kind of demos of things that we know at the moment running on Ultra at 4K, and that's great, but I'm not looking at it on a 4K monitor even. at this point. Yeah. And, you know, I can't see 120 hertz on my 60 hertz monitor. And the streams that were at 1080p anyway for these demos. So, like, we didn't really get... I don't know if you guys have got the raw files of the, you know, 4K versions or anything, but...
You can look at the Doom Eternal 4K on YouTube. That's streamed in 4K.
Yeah, so I watched that.
Incredible in 4K.
I watched that on my projector, and it does look great. It looks insane. But in terms of how it feels to play that, there's no kind of analog there. It's not like you're seeing this huge jump in. You're just seeing something maxed out in, you know, in a kind of a current gen portal. You know.
And to back up your point. Like the large majority, I can't remember the figure, but it might have been close to 90% of people are running in 1080p still.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, I think it was like 6% running 1440p or something like that. Everyone else is still gaming in 1080p. And honestly, if you have a 24-inch monitor, which is, you know, kind of standard, 1440 isn't really useful. You need to kind of step up to the 27-inch mark and up to 32. You've got to have a really big monitor to even start to take advantage of the 4K, which is where the strength is for the consoles.
Absolutely.
The consoles go into your TV and you can buy a $500 4K TV and crank that res, baby.
That's it. Well, let's talk about the console war as well, because there's been some news today as well from Microsoft announcing their budget version of the Xbox, the Series S. Which I think it just got leaked and they were like, okay, fine, we'll talk about it. But they did announce the price for that and the Series X. So they confirmed $299 for the Series S, the discless, basically Xbox stream, Games Pass box, essentially.
USD, yeah.
Game Pass, Steve.
So you reckon the S is, we're looking at about $500 for the S? Bit more
for the direct conversion at the moment is about $410, $415. So you probably tax, $450 to $500 for the S, and then how much was the X again? $500 US. Yep. Yeah. So you're looking that's about close to $700 on direct conversion. So $750 to $800.
So,
you would.
So it's a 3070 or a Series X. Yeah, essentially. So.
But it does also have, you know, the advantage of it being a Blu-ray player and. Yeah, all in one unit and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're a console gamer and you're not swayed by the idea of moving to PC, then like this is heaven for you. This is like the Series X. So, as provided you have a screen that can take advantage of all of these new features off the bat, because you know ultimately we're in a cross-generation period, and you're going to get games that are playable across both for some time to come. Xbox first party for sure, but you know, third party would be stupid to abandon such a large base of the previous generation too quickly. So there's that. There's also like I said, you need pretty much a very modern, as in like the last year or so, maybe 2 years of TV that is specifically featuring some of these gaming features, such as variable refresh rate and auto low latency mode, and you know, 4K HDR 60 or 120 or whatever, and
which you need HDMI 2.1.
You do
for,
so it
right?
needs to have HDMI,
which not a lot of TVs, the budget ones, don't
have. Yeah, so Vizio's come out with like I think their P series, which is pretty decent according to reviews I've seen so far in kind of lower price bracket. So you know they're starting to come, but it's just more like if you're just buying a Series X and bringing it home to your current TV that's been there for a couple of years. Like, you're not going to see a lot of these improvements.
Yeah. I thought the price of the Series S was pretty good. That's certainly a pretty tempting, because that's how much, the Switch is a little bit less than that now, isn't it? So Switches you can get around 400 to 450.
Low 400s.
Yeah, low 400s, somewhere around that. So that's going to put pressure on the Switch, which would be good.
So here's another part to the Microsoft puzzle, though, is that, and it really shows where they're pushing Games Pass as their kind of main feature, is that they've got this thing called Xbox All Access now. So essentially it's like buying the console, but on a plan, like a phone. So you're just like, cool, I'll just sign up for my $35 a month Xbox plan and I get the console and Gold and Live or, you know, whatever, like your just all the services for $35 a month, kind of thing.
That's smart. That's a really good system.
Actually, I think it's really good marketing. I think they're trying to move the, you know, especially as people get older, like you can, I was watching Alana Pierce's YouTube stream earlier today, and she was talking about how, you know, it'll get through to the head of like the older generation. Oh yeah, I can get the kids an Xbox on a $35 a month plan. Sounds good.
Yeah. Is it weird that it's like the Australian site joined with Telstra?
Yeah, well, they already had partnerships in the past with Telstra, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, right.
That you could like rent an Xbox like on a plan previously. But yeah, I mean, so yeah, they're just doubling down on the whole idea of like they want your subscription dollars. They don't want you to one-off buy a piece of hardware and then go for like a 3-5 title attach rate. As in purchases of games.
Because the next console may not exist.
That's it. So they may not have another console. They may just have newer versions of this console over time, like you have your new iPhone, you know? Like you just go, oh, yeah, cool. It's like, we'll send you the new one. You know, send us back the old one and we'll send you the new one and you stay on the same plan or it's $10 more than that a month, you know? Once they got you on the plan.
I mean, they could still do that on the next one, but thinking beyond that, You don't get a console at all. It's all streamed.
That's it.
And you are literally just paying $30 a month to get Xbox Game Pass, sponsored by Xbox Game Pass Steve. Mm-hmm. And that's all you get. And like you just buy that and then you stream everything to your TV and all you have is like, do you even need a receipt, like a small receiver maybe? And that's it.
Well, you're kind of going in the Stadia route then, aren't you?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well,
xCloud is their version, yeah.
Yeah,
xCloud's their thing, but why bother manufacturing consoles when you can just build the hardware, sit it in a big old server room somewhere, manage the costs so finitely, and then get all the data you need about playtime and all of those things directly through your stream, and then bam, there you go, Bob's your uncle. So we'll get to it eventually, but this is a step on that path, I reckon. Yeah.
And you'd lose your revenue stream through secondhand market either then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I think that one reason they're still doing the hardware is to compete with the other makers, you know, like.
Oh, it's too early. It's too early to go Stadia on this, right? There's no appetite for that yet.
You don't want to just give the console market to Sony on a platter, you know? So you've got to come up with these other ways to like tie these things in. And yeah, I think they're doing a pretty decent job of selling their product that way at the moment. So,
speaking of tie-ins as well, I do like it with the Xbox Series S, how you can actually order your fast food directly from the console. Because it looks like one of those little speaker boxes that sit where you lock up the backers.
PlayStation 5, like, so we still haven't seen the PlayStation price yet because there's been this whole brinksmanship game of not announcing the price, which is just kind of been pointless really because they both know what they're going to sell it for. I don't think there was any like there's not going to change the prices that much. And now that Microsoft's come out and said, okay, you know, it's $299, $499, go Sony, like it's really on Sony to kind of come out and be like, can we match $499 or not?
So the Series S has got limited resolution, doesn't it? It's only 1440p, is that right?
I think so, which look on a 4K display, like it's not as noticeable as it sounds like it would be. Like a lot of games running at 4K, especially, and then you've got DLSS as well. So I'm not sure about the actual output. I think it's still output at 4K because of
Yes. But okay, so internal. What I'm reading here is base model have a 512 gigabyte NVMe drive, 4K playback, 1440p/120fps support dependent on the game and includes ray tracing.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well. So they're just basically saying, look, you can run it in high refresh rate mode, but you've got to drop, like it'll only go up to 1440p, essentially. Yeah.
So it's a slightly nerfed version, but
not the worst thing in the world, though.
No, and it's considerably smaller as well, if you saw that as well.
Yeah, it's weird. It's got like bonus a points. Big like, fan vent, black fan vent on the top, which I don't know why they...
Yeah, on the top and on the side, so like... Yeah, literally, like if you need a heater and some of those little space heater things that you put in your room, you put on the ground and then you just fire this thing up and put on a new Crysis game.
Yeah, so plenty of hardware news there. Been going on most of the episode so far, just on the hardware. But Yeah, nothing's really changed in the games this week in terms of announcements or anything. I haven't really noticed anything. Knocked my socks off. No,
you're incorrect there, Steve.
I am.
On the hardware front, Nintendo, the Super Mario 35th anniversary on the hardware front, you can now get Mario Kart Live Home Circuit, selling at $150, so roughly Australian. It's an augmented reality Mario Kart game. It comes with, I don't know if it's one or two physical carts, but it comes with a physical cart. Two physical carts. Thanks, Dave. And you put it down in your house and it has a camera on the back of the cart that kind of sits above the, you know, Mario, whoever it is. Then when you're playing on your Switch, you look through the camera, but you can set out a track in your home. This thing is cool.
I was watching the video and watching it with a mate, and I watched it really quickly, and I was trying to work out how it actually works it out. So you've got like the little checkpoints and whatnot. I was just, yeah, it was kind of interesting. If you haven't seen the video, go watch the video. It looks super cool. I would love to see this thing in person.
Dave, have you cleared some space in your apartment yet?
look, I mean, I'm not hyped about this, to be honest. This looks just like the world's silliest gimmick. You can play Mario Kart with amazing courses, with amazing jumps, crazy turns, but no, I want to just do a figure eight in my lounge room.
Oh, but you can create whatever racetrack you like in your house, Dave. Think about the possibilities. You can go around your books. Sorry, you don't have any books. You could go around your coffee. You probably don't have a coffee table either. No.
You go around your pile of clothes.
Around the empty brandy and scotch bottles and like
pile of clothes, the recyclables pile, the new beer area, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you, Dave, in terms of like what this is actually going to feel like when it gets into your home is not what it looks like on the game. I 100% agree, but the idea is really cool, and it's nice to see that Nintendo are still pushing, like their Labo thing, and they're pushing to trying to do some alternative things.
That's it.
That one day will form the basis for something really awesome on a grand scale.
Totally, and coupled with that on the software front for Nintendo was the Super Mario 3D All-Stars Collection, which has been artificially limited both in hardware and in software for a 6-month period. Why?
In hardware?
Yeah. So they're only selling this from September 18 to March 31st this year into next year. But I mean, I can understand. Okay, no, I can't understand this at all. I don't understand.
Explain. Are they releasing anything at the same time? That's they're scared of it hampering. I don't know. That's a bit bizarre.
Just artificial scarcity.
That is classic capitalism, Conrad. You control means of production. You limit production and push price sky high.
I guess it works with diamonds as well, so.
Yeah. Well, you get Super Mario 64, Super Mario Sunshine, and Super Mario Galaxy, but not Galaxy number 2. That'll come next year or in 4 or 5 years' time, whatever it happens to be. 80 bucks, roughly. 70, 80 bucks for that. And yes, like you said, only 6 months.
And minor enhancements. See, the thing that gets me is like, fine, they package these games, but why on earth would you limit the amount of software or the period you can purchase something like software-wise? It just, I know, Dave, your explanation holds a lot of weight, but like, just, it's baffling. Yeah, what if I don't want to buy a Switch until after March next year? I can't afford to. I just all of a sudden can't buy that game anymore.
Look, the better explanation is just Microsoft are a huge fan of emulators. You know, they love the emulation crowd. They love people illegally downloading things and playing them on their machines. So they're really encouraging it by creating an advanced version of these games that you won't be able to get.
You're talking about Nintendo, not Microsoft, right?
Yeah, Nintendo. That great. I mean, they're still pulling down YouTube stuff, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, would you pick this up, Liam, for your Switch?
No, I would not. I'm just waiting for my remake of Wind Waker. That is what I'm waiting for. But I don't really get into the remasters, remakes. For me, I've never been a person to replay games over and over again. Even if a game's got huge amounts of replayability, I don't go back to games. I've played those games. I'm happy with it. That doesn't look like they've done anything special with it. I mean, it can be portable, but I could do that on my DS as well with Mario 64. So, yeah, I'll give that one a skip, I think.
And, I mean, you're only getting one good Mario game anyway. It's up to you at home to decide which one I'm referring to.
I'm going to go with...
I was going to make the argument that Super Mario Galaxy is pretty awesome, but...
Yeah, I was thinking Galaxy too.
Yeah.
Is it? Or is it?
We'll find out on next week's 50th episode which Super Mario game Dave is talking about. Will the sun shine?
Yeah.
Will it be 64?
Next week, if it is next week, will be our 50th episode, so that's pretty exciting. I'm not sure we're going to be able to do anything other than the same thing we've been doing for it, but it should be exciting nonetheless. Maybe we'll come up with a series of questions or listener questions for that. We'll try and make it a little bit special.
Yeah, we could talk about Flight Simulator.
No doubt. So, Dave, the wastes, the land of wastes. Have you been wasting the land?
So people on streaming have already finished it. They play out a lot of time into it quickly and got it over and done with. It's I'm playing it on the third highest difficulty, the veteran difficulty, and it actually is probably making me enjoy it a bit less because everything's quite hard now.
I mean, you're a veteran. Let's be honest.
Well, that's why I selected it, but I'd really like to see someone do it on the hardest difficulty now in this case, because it is quite brutal in that every battle I'm getting my ass handed to me repeatedly.
Do they do the thing that they do in XCOM where, you know, someone would be on, an enemy would be on one health and you go and shoot them and you miss, or you're real, like, what is it? Sorry, the 99% accuracy. Sorry. Does that happen in this?
There's been a lot of gripes about it because they artificially cap accuracy at 95%.
Right.
So you can never have 100% chance to hit. Like in an XCOM game, you always have 95.
Okay.
And 95 seems to hit a lot less than 95% of the time.
So
it seems quite odd.
Yes.
Yeah. And whether that's
just the human perception of patterns, which our brain is excellent at doing and associating the negatives, or is it actually a flawed system?
No, I don't think it's flawed. I think there might also be extra negatives in there based on difficulty level.
Yeah, okay. So it claims 95%, but the formula is worked. So what else does it kind of scale up, do you know, as the difficulty increases?
I think it's basically the damage the enemy does and the hit points that they do, because, I mean, even the low-level enemies have more hit points than basically my tank, than everyone bar my tank. Right. And they seem to be hitting pretty hard as well. So
Introduce any further sort of mechanics in the gameplay or anything like that, or is it just kind of an increase in that, in those areas that you're talking about?
It's going to be, it's just a pure numbers increase, basically, yeah.
How are you finding the story? Last week we talked a little bit about some of what the reviewers had said about the kind of depth of the story, but also the focus of it. Like, it's quite apparent that what you're actually going to achieve long term is quite apparent reasonably early on. You finding it's quite coherent, or?
So it's interesting so far. So just to quickly go into it, at the end of Wasteland 2, the ranger base in Arizona was destroyed, basically, and now the rangers have been falling on hard times, and they've got to go into Colorado under this mysterious man called the Patriarch, and he's said he's going to give him help if they can help him out. And as it turns out, he's not going so well health-wise, and there seems to be a bit of a five-cornered power play to take control of Colorado when he's gone. And it becomes apparent pretty quickly that he's a bit of a hard ass. So if you like that, you can go on his side and help him out, but you can also help out all the other little schemers as well too. And
has everyone got a plan to overthrow him? Like everyone you come across, or?
Not yet. No, not quite yet. I'm not at that stage yet. I'm sure there are various schemes I'm going to have to work out. But you've got to. It's always worthwhile remembering that these Wasteland games Wasteland 1 came before Fallout and was the inspiration for Fallout, and that there is a lot of silly humor that's in both of them. And you kind of forget that occasionally. And then, I mean, they were talking about the oil fields being run by the Gippers. And I go, okay, Gippers, fine. That's just another generic name, right? And, of course, all of our hundreds and hundreds of American-based listeners are jumping up and down saying, no, I know what that word. That's the nickname for Richard Nixon. And they're actually a cult of Richard Nixon robot-worshipping fascists, basically. All the women are named Nancy after his wife, and there's a giant robot, Richard Nixon, who shoots everyone who says the word communist anywhere near him.
Yes.
It's very silly.
You got to side with him for sure.
Yeah, go down that path.
Well, the problem is that they're against a group of robots who want to heal the wasteland. They're giving out healing for free, and they're horrible communists, clearly.
They represent Silicon Valley, then.
Let's say that there might be a slight Medicare for All American-style influence around that particular joke.
Is this entire game just a large ruse, a large cover for representing the upcoming US presidential election? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I don't think so. No, because I'm
just coincidence.
I'm just taking on the local gang, which is a Latin American gang based on clowns. So,
the It movie's in here as well? What is going on? This does not appear to be the game that it seems to be.
It sounds quite hilarious, to be honest. Has it been running well? Is there any issues with the actual game itself?
It's a little bit slow. Lots of people have been saying there's issues with load times later on, which is kind of to be expected with this sort of thing. But the load times are a little brutal.
They patched it already.
They're going to have lots of patches because in the game itself there's actually a co-op mode where you can play the single-player campaign remotely with someone else, basically. And that was not working.
Yeah, we might have to do that. Because I don't know, can we do it across, if I have it on Games Pass and you have it on
Steam? It probably should be fine, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll give it a go, see how we do. Cool. So is it scratching the itch?
It is. And it is a long, it's not a quick game. So actually, I'll take that back. It is as long as you want it to be. So for those who want to go through and explore stuff and do all the side quests, you can go and do that. But those who want to rush the main story, you can probably go ahead and do that, probably on a lower difficulty. But, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, cool. So pretty positive review from Dave.
Yeah, I know on the Gap podcast there, Job was complaining about the ammo types and things. And, I mean, there are a few little mechanics in the game that you can surprise you if you're not keeping an eye on it, particularly the ammo. And particularly some of the skills that if you're not taking a particular skill, you might be blocking off a whole line of entry, which forces you to do combat at most places. Those kind of little things, you know. But it's good fun. It's good fun, yes.
Nice. The other big name title was Crusader Kings 3, which was dropped on Games Pass earlier than... in Australia, then Steam. Apparently, you couldn't buy it on Steam. I don't know if you can now, but for the first few days anyway, you could only launch it if you had Games Pass. So I cracked on with that. I barely got through the tutorial, I'll be honest with you. I think I just finished the tutorial and started to play, the kind of, it lets you just go on from there if you want, which I did as a petty king in Ireland, I think was the place I started off. And I feel like, cause I gave Crusader Kings 2 a go, maybe a year or two ago, and just thought, and I found it so overwhelming just trying to work out what the hell I'm doing. You know, like you're immediately just like, okay, I have to watch YouTube tutorials for at least a couple of days worth of hours in order to even just kind of unpause the game and feel like I know what's going on. This tutorial though was... it made me feel comfortable with with the interface, but also with how I should interact with people, what my possibilities are, why I would want to do those things. And it just generally kind of, it was a really nice introduction. So I do feel more involved already with this version of the game. So kudos there. Cause I was just really worried that it'd just be another one where I'm just like, it sounds really interesting, but I have no idea what I'm doing kind of thing.
I mean, you did better than I did. I only got halfway through the tutorial for Crusader Kings 2, and I think I got three quarters of the way through the tutorial for Hearts of Iron 4. So you're doing a lot better than I can if you actually do the tutorial.
Yeah, so...
Basically, you're saying the developers are oppressing content creators on YouTube.
So, like, Paradox are, known for their DLC-structured kind of model. So inevitably, there's going to be a million different versions of ways that you can add to this game and things that it'll allow you to do. But, off to a decent start. Like, I do feel like I'm going to play more of that as opposed to just being like, nah, this isn't for me, it's too much. So the intro is quite nice, but I don't really have much more to say about it yet because I've only just kind of gone through that introductory period. It's a game where you kind of write your own history, you know, you kind of do whatever it is you want to do. There's no real goal. It's just about, you know, you doing things, creating elite, creating vassals, trying to take over land if you want to take over more land, creating a lineage for your house and making sure you have successors who will then take over, who maybe inherit some of the traits you or your wife or both of you have in order to make them a good leader in the future, and kind of your dynasty. It's a dynasty type game at its core. So yeah, it is really for that type of person who wants to just be like live in that middle history kind of period and enjoys that kind of medieval approach to things without needing a game there to guide them through. So if that sounds
very it looks very slow, like not in a bad way, it just looks like something you really sit down a couple of hours and just immerse yourself in.
Yeah, I mean it's you can pause at any time and you can run at five different game speeds. So you can kind of speed things up when you want to, but whenever in a significant event happens, it'll auto pause for you. But you do need to kind of like pause and be like, actually, hang on, I need to check this, check that, check that. Yeah, I'll have a look at that guy. What is my goal right now? You know, like, what do you want to do? And you have to self-motivate to do those things. So if that sounds like your type of game, then I definitely would recommend Crusader Kings 3, and I can see why, at least at this point, that it's got such positive reviews so far, because I imagine people trying to review it sitting down would be like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. Like, I get where this is going, as opposed to maybe the previous ones of just only the hardcore being into it.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what have you been up to? You've found yourself a new pet to play.
Sort of, yeah. So I have jumped into Diabolical, which is an arena shooter. So we're talking Quake style. It's created by 2GD, which is a League of Legends commentator formerly, and Itme JP, who was in the StarCraft 2 scene. So it's got a whole bunch of modes in it. It's aimed at the hardcore player base of arena shooters. So Quake, Unreal players. More so Quake, it feels very Quakey. It's super smooth. It's very well polished on release. You can customize everything in the game, like crosshair style, color, size, radius, in full, every 16 million colors, whatever it wants. Your HUD, you can just, like, they have a screen where you get your HUD and you, like, click and drag whatever elements you want on your HUD and put it wherever you want on your screen.
I went into the options to change because I play in invert mouse, and I stumbled upon all these screens to change everything, and I was just absolutely amazed at what you could actually change.
Yeah, and I mean, this is what hardcore players want. They want to be able to tune their game to suit their particular preferences entirely. So they're really hitting that base.
Yeah, it even asked, like, it had some previous presets like Overwatch, Counter-Strike, and you could select those so you could bring in, like, similar kind of settings to those games to make the transition easier, I guess.
Yeah, and... Yeah, so like I said, super smooth. I'm sitting above 200 frames a second. I've got a 3770 CPU with a 2060 card at the moment. It's over 200 constantly. The maps are all very clean. They're not overly cluttered. They're nice, got a very consistent graphic style. But, I mean, that's all background to the core game, and it is Quake. It has a rocket launcher. It has a rail gun, which is called something else. It's a lightning gun, which is called something else. It's got grenades. Yeah.
It's got a very comical kind of style to it, right? Like, yeah. It's very fun.
It does. It is. But underneath that fun is a fairly well-tuned game already, and I can't see it taking off because people don't want to play arena shooters anymore. It's just not the vogue, and it hasn't been for probably 10, at least 10 years. At least 10, yeah. Maybe even 15.
It's moved on to hero shooters instead.
Yeah, you know, that kind of stuff as well. But it is a lot of fun. Granted, I am from, you know, like my first online game was kind of Quake 3, and I really enjoyed that. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun in that aspect. The movement is smooth. The switching is smooth. The netcode feels good. It all feels really well polished already on release.
And if you're a beginner, it can be very daunting as well. Very, very daunting. There's a lot of rocket jumping, bunny hopping. Yep. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's got some cool extra things in there as well that you wouldn't get in, or we haven't gotten in Quake. So you get these special little wee ball things, the little balls, so then they do various things. So one's like an implosion, so you throw it into an area and it's like a little ability and it'll suck into that kind of spot. It's got a smoke, it's got a knockback grenade so that you can kind of throw it at your feet and start movement, or you can throw it at the opposition and cause them to get knocked up into the air, making an easier kill for you, that kind of stuff. So yeah, heaps of game modes, free-for-all, insta-gear, CTF, elimination, team deathmatch, which is a really cool mode actually. So it's called Wipeout. It's 5v5. You'll start around the map and it's, you know, two teams playing off against each other. First time you die, you respawn in about 5 seconds or something like that. The second time you die, it's like 15 seconds and it keeps going each time you die. The goal is to eliminate the entire enemy team at once. So, and that is a really cool mode, actually. That's a nice little tweak on a team deathmatch that makes it a little bit more relevant. It
promotes kind of defensive play because you don't actually want to die if possible.
Yeah, I'm quite keen actually to see how that mode plays out in a an organized competitive manner in a tournament or a competition, to see what strategies come out about that, because that could be quite interesting. And there is going to be some competitions. There's a few team events and a couple of dual tournaments as well, of course, coming up over the next sort of 6 months. And there's going to be support for this game over the next 2 years via Epic, which is where you can get it.
Sounds cool. Like you said, it's really shifted away from the arena shooter vibe. Do you think that's because of the mechanic of arena shooters itself, or it's just the hero shooter kind of pathway took off at the same time as MOBAs took off and the idea of hero kind of based games?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people just try and steal elements from, you know, steal popular things and make them work in other games. And the little ability type things, the additions to this arena shooter are well executed. They don't take away from the core mechanics, and they're not going to be in every mode. So a duel is your classic 1v1 Quake duel kind of style. But in the other modes, it adds a little bit of variety and interesting gameplay to that, so it's not quite so repetitive.
I think in the when you're comparing it to something with a hero pool, say Overwatch style, in Overwatch, you don't necessarily have to be great at shooting, right? You can be a tank, you can be a healer, where these games solely focus on great movement, great aim, basically. Yeah. So your learning curve is a bit like EVE Online.
It's immense. So put it this way, right? I have considerable experience playing Quake. I've played it competitively previously. I haven't played Quake in a while, but clearly I play a lot of shooters. So my general mechanics and being good at Counter-Strike back in the day, my general mechanics are pretty good. My aim is pretty good, even though it's dropping off because I'm getting old. I am usually placing around third in most of the games that I play, but I'm placing third by a considerable margin. The people who play these games regularly are, you know, streets ahead of me in the public space. Yeah, it's the learning curve for someone who has never played a shooter like this. The movement alone, they're going to get absolutely smashed on. So having said that, I did manage to win a game last night, which was really cool. It was Instagib. So one hit kills. And the Instagib mode's cool because you get the knockback grenade as well. So you can create movement a lot easier in that way. So that's fun. It went to four overtimes. So after 6 minutes, I drew with another player, and then we did another three after that. And finally, I won by like three frags, which was really, really satisfying, actually, win. So,
does this game have like a chat box or an in-game voice or anything like that?
Yeah, you've got a standard text chat. I don't know about voice chat support. I haven't looked into it, but yeah. It was a good game. Everyone kind of enjoyed it. That was close. It was good. Haven't had any toxicity in it yet, so...
find that this type of game would attract a certain type of gamer who wants to do that sort of old school style gaming, and they've got history with it, so they're not going to bring that toxicity with them, at least at first.
Yeah, no, you'll get there. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
just it's a matter of saying.
After all.
Yeah, it's when you mute chat.
But yeah, if you're ever curious about, clearly the days of Quake are kind of over. Even Quake Live is dying off quite a bit, which is the Quake 3 in a web browser type thing. Give it a crack. It's fast-paced. It's fun. Even if you jump into the non-ranked modes, because there is a ranked and a free play section, jump in, have a fun. It'll improve your aim for Fortnite, I guarantee you. I used to warm up playing Quake for Counter-Strike competitions because the movement speed and the reaction times you need in Quake, it's a lot faster than Counter-Strike, which is the same for Fortnite. So you kind of get this whole I'm on drugs type thing, because you're used to operating at 120 frames a second, and all of a sudden, Counter-Strike equivalent in speed and reactions, it feels like 60. So you're like, I'm Matrix, the Neo,
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. So if you want to get good at Fortnite, don't play Fortnite.
Diabolically. Yeah. Sounds cool. You kind of sold me on it a bit, but...
It's free, so what have you got to lose? Three gig of your internet quota for the month.
I just don't have the Epic launcher, so,
Yeah. You've only got Xbox Game Pass.
I've only got 15 other launches. Yeah. So you got given a HOTAS mic last week, but we didn't talk about it on the pod because you hadn't plugged it in yet. You had some issues trying to plug it in and get it working.
Oh no, I managed to plug it in fine.
Oh sweet.
Yeah, that's good.
Then what about actually using it to play Flight Simulator? Did you get anywhere with that?
No. It is an older model. It's a Satech X45. So I plugged it in. It got recognized in Flight Simulator, and I was like, sweet, this is great. I kind of set up the binds just loosely for the primary control services, gear down, just the basics that I use, not getting into anything too much. And then I'm like, gold, I'm ready to go. Get in and I gently pull up on I'll pull back on the stick to go to pitch up, and it just goes nuts on me. Just not working. Anyway, I spent quite a few hours googling online, finding drivers, looking on the Flight Simulator forums, all this kind of stuff. I just could not get it to work. Thanks to my mate at work for giving it to me, but I've given it back to him today, and I'm just going to stick with the keyboard. I just couldn't get it to work.
It's just quite disappointing. That's just like the old
days. It is. Yeah, it's a true simulator in every way.
Yeah. But did you do any more flying this week?
Yeah, I did another leg or two of the bush trips, but that's about it. Because I've been playing a couple other things more so.
I said that I wasn't going to do any more bush tripping, but I did a fair few legs of the Balkans.
It's nice, isn't it, the Balkans?
It is quite nice, yeah. I didn't realise it was going to be as enjoyable as it was. But you know what's different about the Balkans to Nevada, though, is obviously it's a different plane. So in the Nevada one, you're flying like a really basic, I can't remember the model off the top of my head, I didn't write it down, but you've got no screens or anything in that plane.
Oh, okay.
So there's no in this one in the Balkans, you've got the GPS, you've got like the in-plane kind of map and everything. You don't have that in the Nevada one. So the reason I was getting lost so much, I think, was I found this one so much easier to do than the Nevada trip. So Yeah, when you try and
so
handle
I
that.
So I randomly chose the good one to start off with because it's got, yeah, because it uses a Skyhawk.
That's
the,
it.
The 182.
Which is a jet, right?
Yeah. Sorry?
Is it a jet or just a propeller?
No, it's a Cessna 182 Skyhawk.
That's it.
It's single prop.
Yeah, so...
But yeah, it's got all the mono, you know, like you said, it's got the nice Gucci maps and things in it as well, which certainly helps, so...
Much nicer environment to fly in.
Yeah.
The good thing about the Nevada one was coming through Yosemite National Park at the end. Like, that was pretty breathtaking. It was pretty cool. But I found in a lot of what I'm doing, like, I'm not getting into the clouds or I'm not seeing a lot of these, like, super cool, you know, cloud cover kind of experiences that a lot of the internet seems to be getting yet. I mean, maybe it's just where I'm flying and the time of days that I'm flying or whatever. The weather conditions just aren't, I haven't seen a lot of weather changes, weather variation in my flight so far. But like I said, I have been sticking to bush trips, which I think controls that weather system and time of
day. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole point of the bush trip is VFR flight. So they make the conditions good so you can navigate easily. Yeah. And there's been no poor weather that I've seen either, but I haven't really chased poor weather.
And there was an update that was pushed out since last week. It didn't make much difference at all for me. I didn't really see any changes in how my rig copes with the game or anything like that. So I'm sure there's plenty in the works. I think it was mostly focused around the ability to download the game, like quickly, because that was like what everyone was whinging about in the first week. So that's understandable.
Yeah.
Dave, you watch? No, it's coming up, is it?
No. So this weekend, I'm a big fan of the Twitch stuff, as you all know. So there is the Nintendo Community Best of NES, and they're doing a 20 game race this Saturday, early Sunday morning Australian time. So they're beating 20 games or parts of 20 games, and the best runners are going to do it in around about 3 hours, a little bit less.
So more speed running in the best of NES?
Yeah, it's always speed running. I'm always watching speed running, but I'll just take you through some of these games because some of this is you know, quite painful. It's actually quite a daunting list, to be entirely honest with you.
So, sorry, that was 3 hours for all 20 games?
Yes, so...
Yeah, right.
It's incredibly fast, and some of these aren't easy either. So we start off with Super Mario 3. They're going to beat three fortresses or castles, not the end of the world levels of the airships, but the castles inside. They move on to the Chippendale Rescue Rangers 2, beat the Ghost House, which is it's a very tight game. It's fairly well run. That's not too hard. But then we're on to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yes. So they have to beat Mecha Turtle. So they're kind of around about halfway through the game at that point.
Past the infamous dam level.
Yep, past the dam. You've got the building, you're traversing over top of the buildings to get to free Splinter and defeat Mecha Turtle. Then going on to Super Mario Bros. 1, you've got to beat Wild Worlds 1, 2 and 3 Warpless. You're then playing the first Mega Man and beating all of the Robot Masters. Without clipping. Then you're beating Marble Madness, which is not fast, but again, you've got to put a little bit of practice in that one. Going through Little Samson, which is... Speedrunners in that game. I'm not familiar with that myself. Zelda 2, you've got to grab the candle and beat the first palace. Not hard to do, but hard to do quick. Chippendale Rescue Rangers, fine. All Zone, you've got to complete the game there. Castlevania, you've got to beat stage 12. Castlevania, not easy to do, but hard to do quickly.
I like this one.
So you got to do Punch Out, and they enter the code to go and fight Mike Tyson, the end boss. So you go and beat Mike Tyson very quickly. You've got to do 50 lines in Tetris. You've got to beat Super Mario Brothers 2 using only one character.
Who would you pick? No, before we go on, Toad, yeah. Toad was always my favourite in Mario 2.
I mean, everyone likes the princess because she can hover and Luigi has that weird jumpy thing you can do, but Toad digs faster and runs a little bit faster. Is that correct? I don't remember now.
Yeah, no, I feel like he was certainly the most agile of all the characters.
Might throw a little bit faster.
Yeah.
So then we go on to the first Zelda. You've got to beat level 5 only. Then you go into Metroid, you have to get 6 E-tanks. So however you want to do that in Metroid, flip through walls, do whatever, beat bosses, get 6 E-tanks. You've got to beat beat DuckTales on easy the whole game. You've got to beat Contra.
Jesus Christ.
You get up to stage 3 in Batman. Then you've got to go back to Mega Man 2 and beat all of the Robot Masters, so beat all 8 of them. And then to tie that off, you're beating Ninja Gaiden, which is another running on the Castlevania-style engine there. That's not an easy game.
So you have to do all of these in one session?
In one session, in order. The runners are doing it in about 3 hours. The winner will do it in slightly less than 3 hours.
So, like, changing cartridges included?
Yes, they're changing cartridges. Yes, they're changing cartridges.
So they'll be running emulators to do this or what?
It's entirely... they all own original copies of the game. Actually, most of them probably do.
No doubt. Yeah. I'm just wondering how the mechanics of changing games works.
So normally when they do these kind of races, like the race I did last year, you allow a 30-second gap between game changeovers to allow everyone to change over at the proper time.
Yeah.
So how do they determine when to finish each game?
Well, once you've done the criteria.
Yeah, but is someone like being like, tick, yes, go on to the next game, like some sort of overlord?
Well, I mean, it's an honesty system, isn't it? You're streaming it, right?
Fair.
You are streaming it, so it will be obvious if you're cheating. And, I mean, it's not like we're at a King of Kong-style situation where it turns out 10 years later, the dude was running it on an emulator. And
is there like an FIA equivalent that's like, you know, reviewing in progress during the race?
Well, I mean, they're actually shown on the stream so they can see it. So yeah. It's
better stay in the pits for 30 seconds before you continue.
So look, they've got 90 guys running this.
There's over 100 in the full list. Yeah, tally. Right. There's sheets online and they're comparing running times and things. And yeah,
I don't see your name there, Dave.
I'm not a Nintendo NES runner. I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm happy to do DOS games, those sorts of things. That's a very low bar of difficulty. Very low.
Ouch.
But Nintendo speedrunners, they're slightly well practiced. Yeah.
See, I never had a Nintendo Entertainment System, so I'm not like I know all these games, but probably they're only the ones that were cross-platform to Sega.
You were the weird Sega kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
No,
I was too.
Oh, Dave.
Oh, it's a fight now. It's a 2v2 battle on the Eternal Beta podcast. Because I literally have Mikester's NES sitting right in front of me over on my right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is 3 hours is super impressive, right? Like, do you know, this is the whole classic, like, you know, think of things, you know, the Olympics, right? And you have the idea of you have the people doing the swimming race and you put the average Joe in the 50-meter swim with them while they're doing it to see how fast these people are. It would be awesome to put, you know, you could probably, with some of these games, is you find 20 people who have kind of never played these games before and see if they could each finish their part before a runner does the entire 20-game kind of package.
And they could do like Tour de France where you just do everyone starts each game at the same time and then you kind of take times and then it's cumulative time.
Mm. Yeah. So, no, that's going to be pretty cool, actually. So when's that starting again?
So that is 3 a.m. our time Sunday morning. So I'll probably be watching the replay, which is a bit rough here. Yay, Australia. But it's the way it goes, unfortunately.
Avoid Twitter for the spoilers.
Oh, I'll be fine spoiler-wise, I think. But no, it's all about having fun, really. And that's what it is for these guys. Spend a good month practicing and see how well they go. It's competitive, but it's good competitive.
And you guys have
been... That's one of the things that I really admire about the speedrunning community is their, you know, like competitive spirit, because there's no money on the line for anything like this, right? The arbitrary challenges are clearly something they all love in the speedrunning community and they really embrace it. And 100 people playing NES games in 2020 as part of a random race is a really cool aspect of gaming, isn't it?
Well, it certainly beats the 5 people playing DOS games in a random race, yeah.
Yeah. And you guys have both...
Only by a factor of like 20.
You guys have both been defending dungeons again this week. in Dungeon Defenders Awakened.
Yes. Funny enough, we're playing Nightmare Mode, which you aren't awake for.
Mike, can we get an hours count on your Steam profile?
Oh, yeah. Now we can bring this up. 47.6.
Getting there.
So that's doubled over the last week.
I still haven't hit my 50 hours in Flight Sim yet.
Ooh. We moved into Nightmare Mode. So I've been playing a little bit more than Dave, but Dave's been joining me. We've done a couple of different things. But kind of the most interesting thing that I've sort of encountered about this, and I was thinking about this the other day. So there's, you know, like easy, medium, hard, insane, nightmare, and massacre difficulties in this game. So we're up to nightmare, which is the second hardest. It's also the biggest jump. I'm not sure what the jump like is from nightmare to massacre, but from insane to nightmare is quite a jump. And the other thing about not only that in terms of, you know, like hit points scaling and damage and all that kind of stuff, they introduce several new enemies and mechanics associated with that. So up until this point, you've had basically trolls, goblins, kobolds, which kind of explode near your defenses, and ogres are the big things outside of the bosses. So ogres are just massive dudes that have a whole bunch of hit points, but they effectively walk up and swing at your defenses like everything else.
And wyverns as well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, wyverns as well. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. But in Nightmare, they introduce a few new enemies. So spiders. So spiders will drop down around your defense area close to the crystal which you're defending, and they shoot little webs on either yourself or, you know, the heroes involved or the towers, and rendering them inoperable for a short period of time. And then they attack the towers. So they don't attack the crystal and do damage to the crystal, but they render your defenses ineffective. So that's one thing. They have Sharken, which is this weird, like, shark-looking thing with two legs, and they charge your defenses and push them out of the way. So you have walls, and they'll push them back, and then all the other monsters can, you know, walk through your walls and get to the core.
I'm just picturing like that those sharks from the Katy Perry NFL.
No, even worse. Just imagine the NRL Sharks mascot on field. Just one of those guys.
Sweet.
So that they get introduced as well. And there's goblin copters, which is a goblin flying a helicopter type device that drops ogres around your towers, but the ogres won't damage the crystal. They'll just go for your towers.
There's like a lot of aerial mechanics.
And another aerial thing.
Yeah.
So things dropping down, spires, they sit on the ground after they drop in. They kind of all just drop in randomly around, you know, they have spawn points around the crystal area. And that's where you set up your towers mostly.
So will they, because it's all done on levels, yeah. So will they drop, you know, when they're going to drop at like,
yes,
what level? Or
yeah, so okay. The game always lets you know what's going to come in the wave for you in terms
of the wave. That's it.
Yeah, the number of enemies roughly and the composition of them as well.
Right.
So that you do know that these things are coming. But my kind of point with this is that, and I'll kind of speak to why it's like this, but from the start of the game through to the end of Insane, you basically don't get any new mechanics really introduced in the game. All the other monsters are consistent through medium, hard, and insane. Then you get to Nightmare, and all of a sudden you've got spiders, shark, and goblin copters all involved, and there's Dijins as well, which are going to pop up or are starting to pop up now, which kind of zap your defenses and do some other stuff. So in one new level of difficulty, you get four new mechanics to deal with, basically within the first five levels out of 15 or 16 in that. And it's kind of, I feel like they could have introduced these things more gradually over time, over that to, you know, so you can get used to it and accustomed to that. I do know why though. And that's because in the original Dungeon Defenders, when they first made the game, none of these things existed. And then to make the end game content harder in Dungeon Defenders 1, they came up with these ideas and threw them all in Nightmare. Copy, gotcha. Pasta. Lazy.
Right. Are you still enjoying it? Is the goal to reach the ultimate level and kind of win at that, and then you'll put it down, or is it just endless replays?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I really, really enjoy these kind of tower defense sort of games, which is weird because I'm terrible at strategy normally. but, you know, you get a shootery kind of aspect to it as well. I'll just keep playing until I kind of get bored with it. It's a really good challenge as well. So Dave and I were trying to get through Alchemy Labs, and it's got a boss associated with that, and we tried a bunch of different things. Came up with a strategy, clearly wasn't work, and I managed to do it last night solo playing with a couple of characters, and that was another really cool like win for me. So we'll keep playing. I definitely want to get into Massacre and see how hard it is, because there's another new enemy in that as well, the Sirens. So yeah, still really good game, really interested in keeping playing and seeing how it goes, but starting to hit that curve.
Liam, did you get onto any gaming this week?
I actually did not. I probably played a few games of Overwatch and COD. this week was a very hectic week, so no new games. I did say I was going to pick up Dead Cells. I updated. I turned it on, did a little run through. But, yeah, nothing really. I did go through the patch notes for the past few patches of what Dead Cells have done. And I really like how they just take on board all the community feedback, and they, if you go to the patch notes, just for shits and giggles, go have a look, and it actually says, you know, this was a community suggestion. So it's good they're still very active and listening to what their customer base wants.
Yeah, I, speaking of patch notes, I was watching the, you know, obviously the hardware news took up a lot of the last, you know, few days of last week. Then there was the launch of NBA 2K21 on the weekend, which has just been a fair debacle, to say the least, in terms of everyone realizing their hard-earned money was just like being thrown at a, you know, a copypasta essentially, except for one change, which is just making everyone extremely angry. And that is that they've redone the shooting meter entirely, and people just cannot grasp this new shooting mechanic at all. And are losing their shit over it. So I spent like a good day or two just watching people like whinge about this, about shooting 1 of 10 for a game or 3 of 10 from 3-pointers, and like just not being good enough to, you know, to master this system. And everyone else yelling at them, being like, "Don't change the game yet. Just like play it for a couple of weeks before you patch it." So the reason this ties in is that in previous generations, like on launch, the game's actually been quite good generally. In terms of the mechanics and the difficulty, and you know, there's something to master there. Yet everyone cries and whinges so much that they start patching the game to fix it up, to make it the community happy, and end up just taking all the skill gap out of the game completely just to please the fan base. Now, previously they've done this in 2K21 by adjusting the values mainly for the park players, the online players who play in the kind of neighborhood, as opposed to the 5v5 kind of sim players, or, you know, the offline modes and everything, but they were tied together. So if they changed one system, it mucked everyone else up as well in all the different modes. Mm-hmm. Apparently this year they've separated those systems out. So if they make changes for the online people, it's not going to mess around with the offline people. So that's a good start. But they made their first change. They've already made it. Within a week, they've already made changes to the way this system works. Well, is it? Like, how do we know it's really that bad? Like, it's just that it's dropped. It's different. Everyone and they don't like change. And so now all of a sudden we're patching it to change, like, without giving anyone, like, more than a weekend of learning how to, like, use this new system and how it all works. And now maybe they were, you know, what they did is they only changed it for the basic difficulty levels and not for online. So they kind of just went, okay, there's too many people who are novice at this game who aren't having a good time. We'll change it for them, but not for the higher difficulty levels or for online. So I think that's sensible. Now let's see how they stick with this and how many changes they make through this this generation. But it's not always a good thing, is my point, to start making changes immediately to community feedback. Once your game's been out for a while and, you know, starting to integrate it, that can be great.
You got to be careful listening to the community. There's a lot of people out there with very loud opinions that don't know a whole lot about game development and don't appreciate other people's opinions that well, and they just want things how they want it. I've seen a lot of suggestions for you know, games like Counter-Strike over the years. It's just like, why would you even suggest that?
The larger
you don't understand this.
The larger your fan base gets as well, I imagine it's more difficult to like actually comprehend, are these people all talking about the same thing, or is there just millions of voices? Like, can we largely group this into kind of into an opinion? Or the meta-analysis must be quite difficult.
I demand
why you never go on the Blizzard forums ever.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's a notoriously bad for it with Overwatch.
So I demand a shotgun balance in CS 1.6. I want to make shotguns viable.
Yeah.
At long range.
Yeah, yes. At long range.
Yeah.
They should do 400 damage in one shot in a cone about half the size of the screen. Yep.
This is the thing.
That's how shotguns work. The pellets don't just stop, right? They've got to keep going. So if they keep going, they've got to do damage at that range.
Exactly the same damage.
It's obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, exactly. No bullet drop. Correct. No fall off.
No, nothing like that. No. This is Counter-Strike, not real life.
The thing with NBA 2K21 and the NBA 2K series generally is that there's been a very big move away from the sim part of the game and into the monetized, you know, online modes that, you know, make it, it's understandable that that's happened in some senses, why they're focusing on it so much. But it's purely just the arbitrary changes that they make. Every time they make one, it's completely like it makes everyone happy and also really angry at the same time, because the people who weren't yelling before are now yelling, and the people who wanted what they changed are maybe semi happy, but like they're now yelling about the next thing, or they've nerfed this too much. Unnerf it, you know, and they kind of do this back and forth thing through the whole year, just trying to keep the player base happy, and no one's ever happy. I don't know, I just kind of wish that they'd just be like, that's the game, play it, like that's how it is, you either be good at it or you're not. Like,
there's a really good argument for having a very consistent game for that, because people will adapt and adjust over time, and you know, by the time NBA 2K21 or 22, whatever you're up to, launches, everyone's used to this shooter mechanic. And then they could flip-flop back to the old one and everyone would be like, why are you doing this? The other one was so much better. It was, you could have so much better control over it, or, you know, like...
Exactly.
Sometimes you've got to let things roll and see how they play out over an extended period of time.
Yeah, at least give it a month or two, like, before you drop any sort of change. And maybe, like, kind of... talk about what feedback you're going to change first, like, as opposed to just like, we made these changes, this is what we've done. But anyway, like, this is all circumvented somewhat by the fact that the next gen version is a complete overhaul of the game. Like, the next gen version is not just the current gen version, you know, with some flashy graphics. Like, it's the flagship. So essentially we'll see if this is a kind of a tester period for that stuff, for that version, and if they make any changes. But it's only a couple of months away, right? So does any of this even matter? Are they just putting it out there, trying to get as much money as they can, just change whatever and, you know, make as many people happy as possible and then be like, cool, now buy the new one?
Well, they're definitely like after that.
That's all the sport games, right?
Yeah, well, specifically in this changeover period where they're, you know, kind of actually building two separate games here.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we didn't have a super long list today, but we still managed to fill up an hour and a half of blubber. So
content, baby.
That's it. Loving it. 50th episode next week. I thought we might take a week off. I don't know if we will. But I think I'll try and come up with something interesting in terms of the format for our 50th episode. Or maybe we'll just all get really drunk on a Tuesday night.
No? Sounds legit.
Yeah, legit. Yeah, Dayton. thanks for listening to us again, guys. We'd love to have some feedback, either via Twitter or on Twitch as at Eternal Beta Pod. You can hit us at eternalbetapodcast@gmail.com or the eternalbetapodcast.com website. You can comment on the episodes there as well. But largely, if you could join our Discord, links in the show notes. Thanks, guys, for joining us this week.
Thank you.
See you later.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week. Ciao. Who are you pointing at, Liam? You're the Mike? Top left to me.
I thought Mike. That's about Mike. You go, Mike.
Actually, we should do this. We should do this. Everyone point to Liam.
Oh, you're all in the wrong direction.
I've got you on side on half monitor, so everyone's above me.
Oh, that's right. Depends on the screen.
How do you split the video out?
You can...
No, I've just got Discord on half the monitor.
Oh, right. Okay, gotcha. All right,
Mike.
Oh.